This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, homegrown terror makes headlines again, and Nelson Mandela may become the face of De Beers Diamonds. Joining us to discuss these topics and more from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Joe Davidson. He's an editor at The Washington Post. Laura Washington joins us. She's a Chicago Sun-Times columnist. She's at our Chicago Bureau. And Nat Irvin, professor of future studies at Wake Forest University, is at member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. All right, folks, we all woke up to the headlines today. Seven arrested in an alleged plot against United States buildings in Miami and Chicago, including the Sears Tower in Chicago. Of those seven, we're told five were African-Americans, said not to be linked to Al-Qaeda, but to a Muslim group here in the United States. Joe Davidson, we continue to hear these offshoot terror groups. What many people are concerned is now we are seeing what the media has deemed homegrown terrorists.
Well, I think that this is a story that might turn out to be less than it appears at first. And the reason for that is it seems as if it seems, based on comments from law enforcement officials who've been quoted in the press this morning, that these people had aspirations but no means, is the way one law enforcement person characterized them. He said they were homegrown wannabes. Another person said they were homegrown wannabes, who apparently talked a good game, but really couldn't walk the walk if they wanted to. I think it remains to be seen just exactly what they will be charged with and how this will fare in court if, in fact, all they did was talk about some illegal activities or what would be legal activities, as opposed to having any actual plans to carry out those activities.
Laura Washington, what about the concern of some, though, that will suggest that this may be the infancy stages of those who will be able to have the means and who, 5, 10 years later, maybe 1 or 2 years later, will have the means and will be able to perpetrate some of what we are calling homegrown terror?
I think you do have some concern in that arena, just because in this case, five of the seven young men who were arrested are, in fact, U.S. citizens, as I understand it. So these are not people that you would expect to be that alienated that they would even talk about this. But I think Joe is right. And not only are these not really homegrown terrorists, I think they're sort of pretend terrorists. As Joe points out, they were not really involved in any meaningful activity. The FBI has said that very clearly. And there's an issue here, I think, which we'll probably hear more about as the days go on, about how these guys got snared in the FBI's trap. It sounds like there was some talk out there, and the FBI basically set them up and engaged them in some undercover activity. So when they were doing a lot of this talking, they were actually doing it to undercover FBI agents. So to me, it looks like, again, maybe a tempest in a teapot. Certainly we want to take people like this off the street, but whether or not this was something that, you know, was even maybe even being encouraged by law enforcement officials so that they could essentially arrest these guys, whether or not they really ever really had the potential to do anything, I think remains to be seen.
Now, here's what's interesting, though. We, over the last 12 months or so, have seen a number of arrests like this, perhaps not on this scale, but a number of arrests like this, which have included African-American males who seem to be disenfranchised and looking for something to hang on to.
Well, you know, Ed, this comes at a time, ironically, I think there's a story today about the growing social isolation that many Americans are feeling in America, that there is a sort of a disconnect, particularly among young people, and that they turn perhaps now to this group here may be a reflection of groups connecting themselves through religion, which I think this group is called the Seeds of David group. I've never heard of. Maybe it's like the Branch Davidians, for all I know. But we can expect, and I think Joe and Laura touched on it, that this group in particular may not actually be. They're sort of wannabe terrorists, but they could be a reflection of the larger issue of, as I said, of social isolation, and then finding themselves connected with larger terrorist groups or ideas. In this instance, it's alleged that one of the members had pledged a bayat, which is an oath to Al-Qaeda. Who knows what that actually means, whether the FBI is really the group is really the spur behind this whole little idea. But I think that it does point to this is the kind of thing that you have to pay attention to. You have to take seriously if you're in a period where social isolation is becoming a norm. What do people do when they want to cling to each other, and what kinds of ideas do they bring to that group? Sometimes it could be dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Let me move on to another kind of terror, and one that we have seen far too long in the African-American community, and that is the crime that has run rampant in many areas. We had Mayor-elect of Newark, Cory Booker, on the show just a few weeks ago, and he made it very, very clear that his number one goal was to clean up the streets of Newark and rid it of crime. Now we're finding, and we've seen an increase in security around the mayor-elect, as well as lockdowns in a number of prisons in New Jersey, because they have found letters from high-ranking Blood gang members talking of an armed uprising and an assassination threat against Cory Booker. Joe Davidson.
Well, I think that this is something that it makes sense, obviously, for law enforcement and Cory Booker to take very seriously when you have a situation where gang members in different prisons are communicating with each other, plotting uprisings in those prisons, and then going on from that stage to assassinating the mayor-elect of Newark, New Jersey. It's really kind of scary when you realize the level of organization, not just organization, but criminal organization that can continue to go on and perhaps is even enhanced in the prison environment where you have all of the gang members with each other. I think it's very fortunate that the law enforcement officials were able to nip this in the bud, if that in fact is what has happened.
Laura, it's interesting. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't understand how in the world. How can you be in prison and have a cell phone and have access to being able to send text messages? How can you have all of this stash of guns, drugs? This is just beyond crazy to me, and it speaks to me that maybe the first thing, not just the mayor, but the state and the federal government ought to do is investigate this prison. The second thing I would say also, too, is
well,
that
but now
this
we
is
know historically there have been stashes in prisons for a long time. You know, anyone who's watched a prison movie knows the stash of cigarettes, and, you know, Shawshank Redemption showed you can have
sure.
an entire store. So now it's just moved with the technology to get cell phones in.
Should we be complacent about this?
No, that's not my suggestion.
I just think it's stunning that a lockdown environment like this, where we put our criminals because they're dangerous to society,
and
here's
some guns
to
take with you.
Access to technology. I guess they're in this particular prison. They pick up an average of 4 cell phones a month from these guys. So this is an ongoing situation.
What they might want to invest in is those blocks that many people believe
sure.
the hotels have bought to block.
Right. Absolutely.
But you know, the sad truth is sometimes these kinds of situations are facilitated by prison guards. There was just prison escape, jail escape here in Washington D.C. That was allegedly facilitated by a guard. And so these things do happen. I'm certainly not suggesting that was the case in New Jersey. I don't know the facts of that case, but it is true that prisons all over this country have contraband in them of all sorts, and it is certainly not unknown for the prison officials to be involved in that.
Here's an interesting question, though, Nat. Pick up on this, if you will. The idea that there have been cries from many in terms of black leadership not being as vocal as they should be over the years in terms of eradicating crime in our communities. Some might say that this is one of the reasons why. What do you do to somebody and for someone like Cory Booker, who made it very clear again when he was on this show, almost like a bounty hunter? I'm out to get these guys. I'm going to clean up these streets, and that's what's going to happen. He needs, I would suspect, at this point, some backup from the community.
Absolutely. And I think that is the key issue here, is that this is an opportunity for the citizens of Newark to determine just what kind of city do you want to have? What kind of future do you want to have? What kind of schools do you want to have? What kind of economic development do you want to have? How do you want your city to be viewed 5-10 years from now, as one of the worst places in the United States to live, or one of the best places in the United States to live? And it clearly can't be Booker's. It can't be all left up to the mayor. It's got to be ordinary day-to-day people, preachers, so-called civil rights leaders, whoever you are. This is an opportunity for you to make your voices not only known, but to actions around, put some actions around the words. This is the opportunity for a change of consciousness if the citizens in Newark are about it.
And the community leaders and the preachers may need to take the lead on this because, Ed, as you point out, Cory Booker is a politician, is sort of a lone voice. And I think the reason for that is African-American politicians are afraid of the crime issue. They're afraid of appearing to be tough on crime because it doesn't fit in with their notions of the liberal, tolerant leader.
Right.
You know, that makes me a Republican. That makes me a bad guy in my own community. Right. When actually they would be, I think they would be celebrated if more people took those kinds of positions.
All right,
you know, let's chat.
Go ahead, Joe. You want to say something real quick?
Yeah, I'm not sure I totally agree with that. I mean, I think there are plenty of black politicians out there who've taken strong stances against crime. And I think they clearly understand that their constituents are the ones who are most victimized by crime. And so I think it's clear to them that strong stances against strong but at the same time fair positions against crime win them votes.
Such as, can you give me some examples?
I think many of the mayors across the country have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I think many mayors have done that. And if you look on Capitol Hill, for example, these crack cocaine penalties that are now castigated as being so unfair, they were supported by members of the Congressional Black Caucus when they were first introduced.
Yeah, we all know the catch-22s that you find in urban areas, and that is diminishing morale among police based on the economics of many of these cities and the inability to man police forces concurrent with the upswing in crime. There's a question of just plain fear from residents, this whole no-snitch phenomenon that's gone on in our community.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting dynamic that we see. Yeah. Talking about interesting dynamic, let's turn our attention to Nelson Mandela now. Interestingly enough, there will be a movie released in January of 2007. Diamond is the working title of it, produced by Ed Zwick out of Los Angeles, a famous producer there, which tells the story of two South Africans, a mercenary and a fisherman, during the savage 1990s Sierra Leone civil wars when rebels seized mines to sell what were deemed as conflict or blood diamonds. Interesting now that De Beers, the diamond company, is now talking about hiring Nelson Mandela to come and talk about what the real diamond mining world is like now. Their assertion is that there really aren't any more blood diamonds, conflict diamonds, that all of that has changed, and they believe Nelson Mandela would be the face on it. Some suggest that Mandela may in fact do this because when De Beers chairman Harry Oppenheimer died in 2000, Mandela recognized his support for democracy and his philanthropic causes there for the country. Laura?
Well, one question I have is, you know, is Nelson Mandela being paid for this endorsement? You know, we just saw this recently with another icon, and that was Andrew Young, who, of course, is now working on behalf of Walmart. One question I would have is Mandela being paid, or is he doing this independently? He, as I understand, he makes the case that De Beers has been an asset to his country and has, in many ways, provided many resources, philanthropy, and so forth, and that should be applauded. But, you know, history is history, and if Mandela wants to say that things have changed, that's fine, but I think that this documentary is going to tell a different story about the impact that the diamond industry has had in many places in Africa.
Yeah, we should note, though, it's a feature film, not a documentary, but more than that, we should also note that Nelson Mandela, it's being said by an insider in De Beers, is being wooed by the company to do this. As far as we know, there has been no deal as yet. Joe, what does this do if, in fact, Mr. Mandela steps up to his legacy, if anything at all?
Well, I think that if Nelson Mandela comes out in favor of the diamond industry, then many more people will feel comfortable about buying diamonds, because there's no person really more respected in the world, I think, than Nelson Mandela. And people see him as a person of principle and not just someone who would profit, you know, in order to start shilling for a diamond cartel. Having said that, I think Nelson Mandela is also very much aware of the importance of the diamond industry to his country. De Beers is a Johannesburg-based cartel that controls diamonds from around the world. Most of the blood diamonds, however, didn't come from South Africa. They did come from places like Liberia and things like that. And so the extent to which Nelson Mandela or anyone else perhaps who studies this, who does not study this issue closely, and I don't know how closely Nelson Mandela studies it, I wonder if they would know the extent to which blood diamonds are still available from places like Liberia, yeah, as opposed to South Africa, which has much greater control over its diamond
industry.
Though, Nat,
as Joe suggested, one would have to believe if Nelson Mandela involves himself in this, his history has always shown that he has moved to the righteous side of all issues seemingly that he's been involved with. One would believe that this would be the same.
Absolutely. I mean, Mr. Mandela is not about to give the diamond industry any kind of a pass. What I think, this is part of Mr. Mandela's continued long walk to freedom. This happens to do with the economic aspect of it that Joe alluded to. I think also, too, and we don't know what the exact facts will be in terms of this relationship, but probably more than anything, Mr. Mandela is going to be talking about the Kimberley process, which was that process that started in South Africa a few years ago, where nations around the world, obviously beginning with the continent of Africa, would come together to certify that most of the diamonds that any of us would buy, should anybody buy any diamonds, I'm not one who buys diamonds, but anybody who did, that they would be certified to not have been a part of the blood money. And I think that Mr. Mandela is not, when I think of him, I think about as a statesman, as a, yeah, Baptist. We don't have saints, but he is, as far as I'm concerned. But he's also a businessman, and he's thinking about the economics, I think, of what this means to the continent of Africa, and that there is a legitimate process, although not perfect, but that the diamond industry is trying to come to grips with. And I there's no chance he's going to, yeah, sell out to the diamond industry. No chance. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's unanimous, Laura, Joe, and Nat. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
You too.
You too.
And as always, if you'd like to comment on any of the topics you've heard on our roundtable or any of the stories we cover here on News and Notes, you can call us at 202-408-3330, or you can email us. Just log on to npr.org and click on Contact Us. And please be sure to tell us where you're writing from and how to pronounce your name.